What you see is what you get.
Hello, my name is Pastor Chris Miller, and I am your host on the PC Speaking Podcast, where we are equipping Christians for life. Hello, and welcome back to the PC Speaking Podcast. As always, it's great to have you along. This is episode number 83. We're starting to get a few of these under our belt. We are in part three of our series titled, What's in Your Hand? God using people with what they have, where they are. And we read about characters in the Bible like Moses and David, and they served God in big ways in God's plans for his people. But as famous as they were, we also need to remember that David, Moses, they were people just like you and me. And one thing that really sets them apart, though, is just their availability and their willingness to trust God, to serve God, and to follow him. They weren't necessarily more gifted or talented than anyone else, but they were willing to use what they had, where they were at, to serve God. And that's really the key to being a faithful servant: availability and willingness. And the wonderful thing about availability and willingness is that they're not limited to a group of people or a set of abilities. Those things are not limited by where you are, by what you have. Availability and willingness to serve and follow God are a decision you make that anyone can make. And I think sometimes many Christians have those things but are unsure what to do with them. And that's where being engaged with a local church comes in. A local church provides you with an opportunity to transform your availability and your willingness into fruitful service. So I encourage everyone, if you're listening, go be involved with a local church. Now, so far in our series, we've talked about both Moses and David and how God used what they had, where they were. Moses had a rod or a staff, and that staff became symbolic of God's power. David had a sling. He killed Goliath. We've talked about the stories before, and I think there's a point to be made that God doesn't really need those things, but he does use people where they are with what they have to accomplish his will. And I also think that Moses' staff and David's sling were as much about helping Moses and David as they were about accomplishing God's will. So not only does God allow us the opportunity to serve him and participate in what he has planned, but he also helps us along the way as we do so. And today we're reading from the book of 2 Kings, chapter 4, verses 1 through 7. And personally, some of my favorite stories in the entire Bible come from the books of Samuel, Kings, and Chronicles. Let's read 2 Kings, chapter 4, verses 1 through 7. This is what they say. It says, "Now one of the wives of the sons of the prophet cried to Elisha, 'Your servant, my husband, is dead. And you know that your servant feared the Lord, but a creditor has come to take my two sons as slaves.' Elisha said to her, 'What shall I do for you? Tell me, what do you have in the house?' She said, 'Your servant has nothing in the house except a jar of oil.' Then he said, 'Go ask for vessels from all your neighbors, empty vessels and not just a few. Then go in, shut the door behind you and your sons, and pour the oil into all these vessels. When each is full, set it aside.' So she left him and shut the door behind her and her sons, and they kept bringing vessels to her, and she kept pouring. When the vessels were full, she said to her son, 'Bring me another vessel.' But he said to her, 'There is not another vessel.' And the oil ceased. Then she went and told the man of God, and he said, 'Go sell the oil and pay your debt, and you and your children can live on the rest.'" I probably don't need to tell you this, but sometimes Bible names can be a bit confusing, like Jeroboam and Rehoboam, the kingdoms of Israel and Judah, and how there were sometimes separate kingdoms, and sometimes they were united in the north and the south. And sometimes it can get really confusing when you look at all these different names in the Bible. And to be frank, when it comes to some of those details, if I need to know them for some reason, I actually have to go look them up. I can't remember all that stuff either. And now it's easy to get Elijah and Elisha confused because their stories are very closely related and their names are very similar. And one way I keep them straight in my mind is the alphabetical order of their names. The J in Elijah comes before the S in Elijah. Now, Elijah mentored Elisha. They're both in character, you know, important characters in the Bible. We have an opportunity here to learn a little bit about them, so we'll take advantage of that. Elisha started out as a farmer before he met Elijah, and he was mentored for several years by Elijah before he eventually succeeded him as the leading prophet in Israel. Now, Elijah, he never actually died. A chariot of fire and horses appeared, and he was caught up to heaven in a whirlwind, which is pretty dramatic. Elijah knew that this was coming, that it was going to happen. So before he left, he asked Elijah what he could do for him. And Elisha asked for a double portion of his spirit. And that did happen. And you might ask, you know, what does that mean? Or what did Elijah mean by a double portion of his spirit? And I think this is probably the best way to explain that is by giving you an example of what that means. The Bible records 14 miracles performed by Elijah, and it records 28 miracles performed by Elijah. So there you go, a double portion. Now, Elisha, he healed the sick, he fed the hungry, he even raised people from the dead. Pretty amazing prophet. One of Elisha's most famous miracles was the healing of Naaman. He was a Syrian military commander. He told him to go bathe in the Jordan River 7 times, and Naaman was miraculously healed. And he also did what is a seemingly small thing in helping the poor widow in our passage today. So Elisha the farmer was mentored by Elijah and eventually becomes a great prophet in the nation of Israel. So there's a little bit of information about Elijah and Elisha. And our passage that we're in today is a standalone event, and it's relatively short, and actually it's pretty easy to miss. We don't even know the widow's name. What we do know is that she had lost her husband, and unfortunately he had left her with a lot of debt. She's in a very difficult place. She has no means of paying her debt. She owns almost nothing. When Elisha asks her, what do you have in your house? She says, a jar of oil, olive oil that would have been. That's not much, really. You can cook with it. You can use it in a lamp, and a single jar is probably not going to last very long. But that's really only part of her problem. A creditor is coming to take her two sons as slaves. And I think there are two possibilities there. One is that her two sons will be taken as indentured servants until they can pay off the family debt, or it may be the case that her two sons are just going to be sold into slavery to pay off the debt. Now, obviously, neither one of those is good options for this widow in our passage, and her sons would be like her retirement program. If she loses them, she loses her only source of future security. So she's in a really difficult place in this passage. Elisha tells her to go to her neighbors and ask for vessels or clay jars, and not just a few. Tells her to get a bunch of them. He says, collect these jars, go into your house with your sons, and shut the door. Pour the oil you have into all of these vessels that you have collected. And as you fill them, you set them aside. So that's what she did. She went into her house with her sons. She closed the door and she began filling all of these containers she had collected with oil. And as she filled each one, her sons would bring her another one and she'd fill up another one. And at this point, make note that Elisha had not told her yet what to do with this oil. She's just supposed to fill these jars. And when it comes to God using what you have, where you are, there will be a time when you are required to act without knowing what's going to happen next. Serving God involves trusting God before enjoying the fruit of that trust. You know, we do our best to follow God and align ourselves with His will, but there are always times of doing something without knowing what the result is going to be. When the Israelites carried the ark into the promised land, they actually had to step into the waters of the Jordan before God parted them. The Israelites had to march around the walls of Jericho for 7 days before the walls fell. The widow had to gather jars and pour oil into those jars before she received any instruction on what to do next. And there's always a time of trusting God and what He says before enjoying the fruit of that trust. And that's not strange. It's a concept that everyone understands. That's the order of God's creation. We understand how that works. We know that we must plant a seed and it needs to grow before we can harvest any fruit. The same is true for doing what God says. It's after we trust Him and do what He says that we experience the fruit of that trust. When we obey God's commands, we trust Him in that doing so will lead to the best possible outcome. But we have to act on that and trust God in what He says before we enjoy the fruit of that trust. Now, if we were told the outcome of a situation, we'd probably struggle to believe it anyway. But God often works in ways that we can't explain. And I heard someone say the other day that being an atheist is like going to a restaurant and not believing that there's a chef in the kitchen. Now, to be fair, that's kind of a silly illustration. But it's kind of a fun one. It's easy to shoot holes in that. And I don't mean to pick on atheists at all, but as believers, we might go into the restaurant and know there's a chef in the kitchen, but we don't understand how the chef prepares the meal. In my mind, a big difference between a believer and an unbeliever is really not much more than how they explain things that are beyond explanation. And the widow in our story had to pour oil into all of these borrowed vessels without being able to explain how the oil kept pouring. And we see God work like that all through Scripture. You can probably think of some examples where He does things and people see them happening, but they're not really things that we can explain because they're miraculous. And the widow in this passage is doing nothing more than just pouring oil. When you think about it, she's stressed, she's worried, she's in a bad situation, and all she can do is pour oil. And in doing so, she sees God provide for her. She sees God's provision. It's very simple and it's very subtle. Now, can the widow explain how the oil kept pouring? No, she can't, but she can see that it did. I had something weighing heavily on me the other day, and I was very stressed about it. And I woke up in the middle of the night and prayed about it. I mean, I really prayed in earnest. And the next morning, my prayer was answered. And God had answered it subtly, and it was in such a subtle, quiet way that it would have been easy to not even notice or to think, oh, whoa, you know, that's a nice coincidence. And I had to stop and remind myself, you prayed, and God answered your prayer. There was no spectacular event, no lightning, no fire from heaven, no thunder, nothing like that. It just happened. And I can't explain the mechanics of that, but I can see that it did happen. And my experience has been that when God answers prayer or works in someone's life, it's mostly subtle, peaceful, calm, even quiet. And it's very difficult, if not even impossible, to explain how it happens. And everyone has things happen that they can't explain. And some people say it's a coincidence, and some people say that is God working. Neither can explain how it happened, but we both know it did. One person credits nothing, the other credits God. It's like beautiful meal sitting in front of me. I didn't see the chef make it. I don't know how he did it. He's not going to tell me the recipe, but I know he's in the kitchen. And as we think about God using what we have where we are, the widow lived in a very humble home. She gathered clay pots from her neighbors, and she poured oil into those pots. And that's really all she did. It's not complicated. It's actually simple, very humble thing. And God used what she had, where she was, to give her what she needed when she needed it. And pouring oil from one jar to another is very humble and mundane work. There's really nothing special about it. But God often works in humble work. God works in simple things, and only human pride would say otherwise. People say, I want to see God do something spectacular, or I would believe if God would do something amazing or spectacular. And to that, I have to say, probably not. You know, people saw Jesus do all kinds of spectacular miracles, and they didn't believe. Serving God and seeing work in your life is probably not going to be a big complicated thing. It's probably not going to be a glamorous thing. God works in humble work most of the time. Yes, absolutely. Sometimes we see God work in spectacular and dramatic ways. Parting the Red Sea for the Israelites and then drowning the Egyptian army is pretty dramatic. But most of the time, God works in subtle ways through simple and humble obedience. You know, Moses went to Egypt and he represented God before Pharaoh. His staff was a symbol of God's power, his rod. And he led the Israelites out of slavery through the Red Sea and eventually to the borders of the Promised Land. But the majority of the work that God did in Moses' life would have been in the 40 years prior to him returning to Egypt, you know, herding sheep and goats in the desert, hot, dusty, boring, mundane work. But that's where God prepared Moses for what he had for him. So here's some simple, practical application that will hopefully help you see God work in your life. Just some simple, practical stuff. If you want to see God work in your life, make yourself available and decide that you're going to be willing to serve him, that you're going to be willing to follow whatever he has for you. Consciously shift your focus from yourself and your abilities and your possessions to God. Don't worry about the dramatic and the spectacular. Those things are mostly irrelevant anyway. Shift your focus to finding contentment in God alone. Look for him and trust that he is working in the simple, even the boring and mundane things that you do every day. Look for him in those things. In the Bible passages that we've read throughout this series, God uses people where they are with what they have. And it's often humble. It's not necessarily anything spectacular. Who they are, where they are, and what they don't have doesn't really matter. What matters is that they are available and that they are willing. And throughout the Bible, God often uses people who are nothing more than available and willing to serve, to help people in need. People may need spiritual guidance. They may have physical needs. And because we live in the world, there's always a need somewhere. And God uses who is available and who is willing to fulfill those needs. And if you and I are willing to make ourselves available, he will use us to fulfill those needs. Thank you for taking the time to listen today. Let me know what you think in the comments. Please consider subscribing and sharing this with someone who might find it helpful.